I dare say many of us have been there. You know, you're running your own race in life, suddenly someone crosses your path and soon you become smitten. And soon people are saying things like, they haven't seen you smile this much in years. And you and your partner just can't seem to get enough of each other. And others start to wonder aloud whether this could be the one for you. But then, sometimes inexplicably, things start to sour, sometimes slowly, sometimes rapidly, and that person you loved yesterday, you just can't seem to stand today, or maybe it's the other way around. Either way, while it takes two to tango, some of us seem to have a unique knack for sabotaging our romantic relationships. But why is that? Well, there is a James Cook University researcher looking to get to the bottom of this. PhD researcher Raquel Peel realised that not much study has been done on this rather common conundrum. So she's trying to rectify that. She seems to be the right person for the job because this psychologist identifies herself as being a recovering romantic self-saboteur. Might sound a little bit harsh, but Raquel, I don't think you're going to take too much umbrage at me mentioning that on the radio.
No, you were right, Adam.
Now, before we get too much into the romantic self-sabotage, there's a bit of your personal story that might relate in your explanation as to how this played out in your life and why you were interested in studying it further. You're from Brazil originally. You've got a rather unique and somewhat sad story to share about your early life. Would you be willing to share a bit of that with us?
Yes, of course. So when you study relationships, one of the things that you start realizing quite quickly is that early life relationships will have a lot to do with how you understand relationships as you grow older. So how you understand your romantic relationships will have a lot to do with how you've understood your relationship with your parents and your peers growing up. My story is I was abandoned at birth at a hospital, at a public hospital, and I was later adopted by the nurse on duty. So, but I never actually got to meet my birth parents. But the one thing that stuck with me, even though I had an amazing childhood with my mom and dad, I was always afraid of being abandoned again. And my mom says that I was a little bit like a chewing gum with her when it came to things like going to the shops. I wouldn't take my eyes off her because I was constantly thinking, she might just leave. And that sort of got carried over my life. And I was a little bit like that with romantic partners as well. I was often thinking, they're going to leave. Oh, maybe I'll leave first. And it became a pattern for me.
And it happens on a level often that's unconscious to a lot of us. I mean, when yes. You were abandoned at birth, you didn't have the capacity to even know what that was at that stage in your life. But even though it's happening unconsciously, do you believe that it gets carried into adult life?
I think so. And that is the reason why I always say to people who ask me, how do we get around self-sabotage, or how do we get around, breaking that partner? I think insight is the very first thing that we do. So knowing that you might have a trigger in yourself is the first step.
Now, your story is amazing when you think of what would have the alternative been if the nurse on duty hadn't decided to adopt you that day.
I cannot even comprehend. I was a preemie, so I was born 3 months earlier, so I was quite sick. So I suppose I was lucky in a way that I had those 3 months to form my relationship with my soon-to-be mother, but I can't even think what my life would have been otherwise.
Was it an easy process for your adopted mum and dad to actually take you on as a child?
No, the bureaucracy was, it was actually really harsh on them. Mum said it took her 2 years to officially have me as her adopted daughter, which is so hard to think about, isn't it, that you have that child for 2 years but you don't know if it's going to be yours.
Raquel Peel, how did you end up in Australia and how did you end up in Townsville?
I've always had the dream to travel, and to be completely honest, I loved Silverchair growing up, so that's why I chose Australia.
Silverchair? You like Daniel Johns, did you?
Yeah, so I went to Newcastle the moment I hit Australia and... yeah, I was looking for him, but couldn't find him.
And so how did you end up in Townsville then?
My partner's family lives in Townsville, so we got married and then we moved to Townsville.
And then was it in Townsville you decided you wanted to study psychology?
Yeah, I had studied music before and worked with lots of artists, and I had a knack for talking to people about their feelings and encouraging people, and I realised psychology was the way to be.
You've studied psychology, and as part of your PhD, this is where we get to the relationship self-sabotage. When you were studying psychology, When did the penny drop for you that this was an area that you felt was under-researched and more needed to be done on it?
Yeah, so for my honors project, I actually did a study on suicide. And reading the testimonials from people that wanted to die, I realized that a lot had to do with broken relationships. So I thought to myself, okay, if I can take one step back and start looking at reasons why those relationships are breaking, perhaps I'll be able to have a little bit more of an influence before we get to a stage where it's too late.
Some people are just not compatible with other people. Could it be that a lot of the reasons that relationships break up aren't necessarily self-sabotage, just that people aren't the right mix for each other?
Yeah, absolutely. I always say there are some relationships that are just not meant to be and are unhealthy, and we really shouldn't be pursuing those. There's no point forcing those. But what I want to concentrate on is relationships that actually have the potential to be really good ones, and it's just that we have a pattern of breaking relationships and we can't see that.
How do people that do sabotage relationships, what are some of the common things that happen?
Everyone is unique in the way they do it, but the one thing that it seems to be across the board is they do it to protect themselves. So we sabotage because we don't want to get hurt. So that seems to be the common theme. I mean, the way they do it, it will vary as to how they've learned how relationships are meant to be. But it's an instinctual thing to protect yourself.
No, they're not thinking, because often those relationships start really well. They're not thinking, I'm going to get into a relationship, it's going to be great, and then in 3 months' time, 6 months' time, a year, I'm going to just ditch this person.
No, I don't think it would be a conscious thing. I think, honestly, it would just be a trigger in themselves that, there is a potential for me to get hurt here. It might be that they are finding themselves getting too close to their partners and going, oh, this is too close, I'm out. Or it might feel like myself, or I have this fear of being abandoned. What if I abandon them first? That way I'm in control. So it depends, but it's instinctual to protect yourself.
You're hearing from Raquel Peel. She is a PhD researcher at James Cook University who is looking into relationship self-sabotage. She, in fact, can identify with being a recovering romantic self-saboteur. So when you look at your patterns, were there common themes in your previous romantic partners that would play out the same way or similar way?
Yeah, absolutely. I was very quick to pull the plug on the relationship and move on.
You're in the process of actually looking at this, but you need more people. You need to recruit more people to do the study. So who are the types of people you're looking for?
Actually, anyone in relationships or even single people that have had previous relationships would qualify. So my study is online and completely anonymous. People can find the link to the survey on my website, raquelpeel.com. And at the moment, what I'm doing is I'm looking for three things, really. So I'm looking at the why, how, and what. So why people sabotage, how they do it, and what a self-saboteur would look like. I have been able to sort of identify the common offenders, if you will. There is a famous psychologist, who calls them the four horsemen of the apocalypse.
And what are they?
So criticism, defensiveness, contempt, and stonewalling. So I can tell you for sure those are four things that we should be looking for in a relationship.
How do they play out? So just an example for each. Criticism?
Yeah.
So how does that work?
So being someone who is overcritical of your partner, okay, and if you have that as a pattern.
Stonewalling?
Yeah, so withdrawing from the relationship. So that was me. You know, things get too difficult, too close. Oh, I'm out. I don't want to talk about it. I don't want to get too close.
What were the other two?
Contempt. So rolling your eyes and going, oh, no, this is not for me. Yeah, all defensiveness. It's not me, it's them. That's another classic one, actually.
It's not
that
me,
one.
It's you. I don't hear that added too much, but certainly not in the popular culture. All right, well, Raquel Peel, you've talked a little bit about relationship self-sabotage. How far through your PhD research are you?
Oh, that's one of those questions that you never ask a PhD candidate, Adam.
Yeah, no. Well, I've learnt that today.
Yeah, yes. Look, I'm hoping to finish by the end of next year, but don't quote me on this.
But you're still after more people if they want to get in touch. So Raquel spelled R-A-Q-U-E-L. Peel, P-E-E-L.
Yeah, .com.